Good afternoon. I call the Senate Health and Social Services Committee to order at 1:31 p.m. Today is Tuesday, February 9th, 21. We have a quorum to do business today with committee members Senator Reinbold, Senator Hughes, Senator Costello, Senator Begich, myself, Senator Wilson. Please remember to silence your cell phones out of courtesy. Today, we will continue with our public testimony of Senate Bill 56, the COVID disaster extension sponsored by Senate Rules on behalf of the governor. Today we'll take public testimony to roughly about 2:20, at which point we will close public testimony and go on to our amendment process, and we'll do amendments about 2:55. Our office receive amendments. Those are in your members' packets. We also printed out the additional testimonies that our office received that members have in their packets before them. And to let folks know that are testifying, if you sent us items, you could always reference those items that you sent to us. Don't forget to state your name and any affiliation. If you already testified on our previous meeting, that we will not be calling folks to re-testify if you've already provided public testimony to the committee through the telephonic means. And with that, we will go ahead and have 2 minutes for each person. You may hear a timer, and I'll ask people to wrap it up, and then we will move on to the next person testifying. I'm just going to go in order of the folks that called in. First person we have is John Azada from the Alaska Primary Care Association. John, you may begin your testimony when you're ready.
All right. Good afternoon, Senator Wilson and committee members. Thank you for your time. For the record, my name is John Zazada, and I'm the Policy Director at the Alaska Primary Care Association. We support Alaska's 27 community health centers that provide care for 1 in 7 Alaskans, and we have submitted 2 letters on this topic since the new year. We support SB 56 and strongly encourage the legislature to pass this legislation by next week in order to avoid a serious disruption of the extensive range of administrative, regulatory, and statutory flexibilities that have allowed Alaska to respond to the pandemic. This emergency declaration has nothing to do with mask mandates, hunker downs, school schedules, or restaurant closures. These are all matters of local control, and they will continue with or without the declaration. Alaska's health centers have stood up contact tracing, testing, telehealth, and now vaccination programs that rely on alignment between the state and federal governments. Without action on the EO, either by the legislature or by the governor, we are very concerned about the continuation of these services in the near term. Thank you for your time and your deliberation on this important topic. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask one question before we continue?
Yes, we can.
I'd rather have it on record.
We're taking it.
I'd rather have it on record.
Right.
I just have one question.
All right, we're taking it. Record, Senator Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask that each and every person who testifies states whether they have any financial interest in any way or have received COVID funding, because I think it's very, very important. So anyone who testifies, yes or no, if they've received COVID funding.
I object to that.
Thank you, Senator Begich. So just for clarification, that's just it's a request for folks. If they want to state that or not, they can, or they don't have to state whether they do that in terms of giving public testimony. So public testimony is free for folks to do that. And
hey, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes, Senator Begich.
Just my reason for saying I object is there are people who I have many interests as well, and we have the right as individuals to speak as individuals and to testify as individuals. And if somebody is testifying as an individual, they should be allowed that opportunity. That's all I'm saying.
Yes. So
through the chair, can I comment?
Yeah, but we're going to continue on with public testimony because we have a lot of folks here that are – I just want to make sure that I'm trying to be respectful of these folks' times that have called in for now 3 different meeting days to make sure that we can get through folks to testify. So our next person is Nancy Frederick Pope.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, if Nancy, if you can –
Hello?
Yes, if you can begin your testimony, and you have 2 minutes to testify. If you can start with your name and any affiliation.
My name is Nancy Leanne Fredrickson-Pope. I'm from Palmer, Alaska. I'm a private citizen. I strongly, strongly oppose the SB 56, and I have serious concerns that the people that call in from the healthcare industry they're not really calling in as private citizens. They're calling in as organizations supposedly in the best interest of the citizens of our state. I'm going to have to say that most of them do have financial ties and are hoping on funding with some COVID money coming into the organizations. I think that you guys are supposed to be representing the citizens of our state and not special interests. These healthcare industries and nonprofits, I don't think, honestly, they're not acting in our best interest. Our numbers are fairly low here in the state of Alaska, and I don't believe it's because of the local government here doing acting in our best interest. I think it's because of the dynamics of Alaska and our geographical challenges that we have here. But I also don't believe that this extending this emergency order, the last person had mentioned that it has nothing to do with a mask mandate or lockdown. I think that anything that infringes upon our freedoms and our constitutional rights is something to be wary about. I believe in small government. This is not in the best interest of the people of Alaska. It's only in the best interest of the healthcare industry so they can continue to spite the money from the government. And I really wish that you would listen less to them and more to the people. The healthcare industry has made it a real point to only want to go with the science that is on the line of what they want to hear. There's plenty of doctors out there. There's plenty
your time is up. If you could wrap up your comments.
Information that this is I'm not quite sure how I want to say this to make it politically correct. I don't think I can.
Hey, Nancy, time is up. We're going to now move on to the next caller. We now have Mr. Ed Martin.
Yes, Chairman of the Health and Services Committee. This is Ed Martin from Cooper Landing, Alaska, currently residing on the Big Island of Hawaii because of the mandate. I first would like to testify against this. I believe that it's an unconstitutional abomination and a fraud, and it was perpetrated from the very early start, in which I spelt out sentence by sentence my and my wife's understanding of the documents before you that basically is the reference to health memo and disaster declaration. I encourage you to read that email. Now, as far as I'm concerned, the state of Alaska has surrendered its sovereignty to CDC under recommendations and not the force of law by any means whatsoever by the federal government, other than money flowing to the states under emergency needs. Now, that doesn't necessarily require you folks to use emergency powers to use those funds, because there is one state governor, Kristi Noemi, that has been able to do this without any emergency with regards to many of the mandates that are currently in force and effect now. Now, in the governor's own announcement of this Senate bill, he stated, second to last sentence, that only the legislature can extend these emergency powers. Then you tell me why he's done it three times, and now he's in front of you with another bill for which you guys should have took the bull by the horns way back in November and then extended them. So I call question to that as to the constitutionality of the current enforcements and mandates of this. Well, it isn't even Senate bill. It's just the abomination of the statement for a emergency declaration. Now, as I see it, and I'm 65 years old, as I see it, this is a clear violation and deprivation of rights under the color law by everyone that signed their name on to this declaration and or actions by the governor or anyone else in the Department of Health and Social Services. And
Mr. Martin, now, if you could wrap up your comments. Ed, your 2 minutes are up. If you could wrap up your comments, please.
Wrap it up?
Yes, please.
Simply, you need to cease and desist a letter to the governor to stop this. Now, my wife will follow with her 2 minutes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And next, we have Kathleen Martin.
Yes, hello. Thank you. This is my first time testifying, so I appreciate everyone there who allows me to do this. We have a earth-moving construction company, and that is considered an essential service. However, we did minimal activity this last year due to COVID. We were here in Hawaii when different mandates went into effect and hunkered down here rather than risk. Either one of us, we're both elders, contracting the disease. We have other underlying things. So we had to hire people in Alaska to replace us to finish a borough project. Being an essential service, we were supposed to put together a COVID-19 plan. However, now it's mutating, so I just call it a COVID plan. And basically, all we can do as an essential service is continually try to know what is going out there. Sometimes even the so-called professionals disagree. So we can only advise our employees to be current with whatever the current mandates are. It's constantly evolving. People say, oh, this is what you got to do, and then they go, oh, no, now you got to do it this way. We, as an essential business, are threatened with serious fines and penalties into the millions. The thing is, it is also admitted that COVID could be transmitted before you even have any symptoms. People, some don't have any symptoms. So where the liability actually lies is not clear cut. So I do not appreciate being threatened with, you know, I could be held reliable for this or that as an employer. For me, it's better to minimize any activity rather than be accused of passing on COVID.
Ms. Martin, your time is up. If you could wrap up your comments, please.
Okay. I will wrap up my comment. Please keep in mind that whatever you put out there affects people in multi-layered ways. As a human being, as an employee, as an employer. And one thing I really want to stress is the mental anguish that this is putting on people. People are becoming suicidal, and that is also one of the side effects of what you do.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Martin. Next, we're moving on to Herman Morgan. Morgan, if you could state your name for the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Herman Morgan. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. You may begin when you're ready.
Yeah, I'm speaking for myself, and I agree that those with a conflict of interest or stand to benefit financially, they should submit their testimony in writing. And you're trying to hear, read people's comments. In some places, government officials are being sued for crimes against humanity, for what they're doing. They're destroying people's lives. And I urge you guys to vote no on SB 56 because of inflated infection numbers. And medication like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine that cure COVID within 48 hours. Thus, there's no concern for hospital bed shortage, which is the argument for emergency orders and lockdowns. It seems all this is about receiving federal disaster money, but in reality, it should be all about, like, those thousands of Alaskans losing their jobs and kids not being educated because of these lockdowns. It should be protecting those Alaskans from an untested vaccine. Vaccines are being used for genocide in other countries. In Africa, more young girls die of vaccines than from COVID. Doctors are warning in 3 to 6 months of an explosion of deaths, a life-threatening side effects from this vaccine. One big concern is, why was no informed consent given? Indian Health Services has been vaccinating people in villages in December without telling anyone of the known dangerous side effects. For example, on the local talk radio, a nursing mother said she was breastfeeding and still got vaccinated, even though a few months earlier, in the same committee with doctors, it clearly states at a meeting to approve the vac with Commissioner Cummins, Dr. Singh, on page 132
Mr.
of the
Herman?
Vaccine manual that breastfeeding or evening sex should not be allowed because of infertility and birth defects.
Yes. Mr. Herman, your time is up.
Nice things, end these lockdowns.
You could wrap up your comments.
Pause these vaccines. You guys are destroying Alaska.
Okay, Mr. Herman, if you
20th,
could.
The WHO announced PCR testing has been flawed.
Yes.
Over amplification resulting in way too many false positives. You guys got to stop what they're doing and think of Alaska. It's in your power.
Mr. Herman, we just want to say thank you for your testimony, and we're going to move on to our next caller. Adam Hikes, if you can state your name and affiliation for the record, and for folks testifying, if you could state whether you're in favor or not in favor of the bill, that would also be helpful.
For the record, my name is Adam Hikes. I'm a resident of District P in Homer, and I oppose SB 56. I am a citizen. I represent my wife and myself. I have no financial gain for or against this bill. Ladies and gentlemen, a year ago, we didn't know about which treatments were effective against COVID-19, and we had no vaccine. We now have both. The FDA halted a study of hydroxychloroquine after a study from The Lancet suggested that it may not be safe, despite its well-known safety profile, even for pregnant and nursing mothers, and its widespread approval for over 70 years. The Lancet study was later retracted due to fabricated data on behalf of Surgisphere, a company from which The Lancet derived its data. In October of 2020, the American Medical Association reversed its stance on hydroxychloroquine, which had until then mirrored the erroneous decision by the FDA. In January of 2021, the American Journal of Medicine also reversed their stance on hydroxychloroquine, which had previously claimed it was ineffective. Even Facebook, only after being sued, agreed that it had made a mistake in censoring information about hydroxychloroquine. A recent study found that nations which used hydroxychloroquine as an early treatment for COVID-19 saw 79% fewer deaths than nations which did not. Even one Native American tribe down south saw fit to send their members ivermectin, another potent prophylactic which might offer aid to our brothers and sisters in rural Alaska. We also have experimental vaccines which are rapidly becoming available. In wrapping up, I oppose this bill and ask the legislature to put an end to the psychological trauma inflicted on Alaskans from this past year. Because we have therapeutic treatments and because we have multiple experimental vaccines, there is no longer any need to continue this emergency disaster declaration. We will either learn to live with this virus or destroy ourselves trying to stop it. I yield back my time.
Thank you. Next, we have Crystal Connor. And then that'd be followed by Rachel Lord.
Thank you. This is Crystal Connor from Soldotna. I have no financial benefits from this. I represent myself, my fiance, and our mothers, you know, and lots of people. I vote no on Proposition SB56. I believe in the everyday American's right to choose what is best for them and their family. I would like to remind everyone that not everybody, like half of America, doesn't wear the mask because they literally don't believe the COVID pandemic is even real. Good portion of America believes the pandemic is a propaganda hoax perpetrated by the global elite to steal an election, take down small business, and force a nanobot sales injection for the purpose of tracking as well as ushering a new global currency with the Great Reset, as mentioned at the World Economic Forum. I am censored every single day. All the left has proven during this time in history is that they are a Marxist-driven movement and do not believe in the individual's right to thoughtfully disagree. But this is America. This is the state of Alaska. We believe in the right of freedom to choose, freedom to disagree. And they're planning a second pandemic hoax, by the way, just for everybody to know. So this isn't going to stop. We have to rise up as American citizens, inform ourselves properly, and put a stop to the control of the corporate global elite. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, next up is Rachel Lord, followed by Mindy O'Neill. Rachel, we're having a bad audio connection. If you want to,
is that better?
Oh yeah, that's much better. Thank you. If you want to start over there.
Absolutely. My name is Rachel Lord. I am calling. I'm representing myself. I am a parent. I'm a small business owner. I'm a resident of Homer, and I'm calling to support Senate Bill 56. This is an emergency declaration by the state is necessary for logistics and partnership around the state. All of the debate and the questions of how and what that looks like are merited and important and must continue, but we have a need for a coordinated response to the benefit of the citizens of our communities around the state, our municipalities, and our businesses. This an emergency declaration in the state of Alaska is not about messaging, and regardless of this, the status of COVID isn't going to change in our communities. This is going to allow all of our municipalities, our communities, our representatives, our administration, our healthcare partners, and everybody to work together efficiently and effectively, which is really what we need. We need to be working together and communicating well and communicating truthfully and working with efficiency. And this is really it is critical for efficiency. So with that, I support the Senate Bill 56, and I hope that it can pass out of committee and support it on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will go to...
Your line is muted. Your line is unmuted.
All right. Next, we'll go to Mindy O'Neill, followed by John Hockendorner. Mindy, if you can state your name for the record. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mindy O'Neill, and I'm the presiding officer of the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly. On March 11, 2020, Governor Dunleavy declared the first state emergency for COVID-19. Since then, the Fairbanks North Star Borough has been able to continue providing public services by adapting how we conduct business, taking actions necessary to protect employees and the community, moving meetings online, and developing a risk matrix for public facilities. However, as a second-class borough, we have often felt hamstrung as we lack health powers and therefore cannot spend our own tax revenues on health and social service responses to the pandemic. If the state declaration expires, there are severe local implications, including that the borough may have limited eligibility for future federal grant monies related to the pandemic and the use of the Carlson Center as an alternative hospital and vaccination site may be jeopardized. These effects would be widespread, affecting our most vulnerable populations, our hospitals, long-term care facilities, public facilities, school educators, support staff, and students. If the state declaration expires, this puts our community at a disadvantage to protect ourselves and be good neighbors to the rest of the state and the country. We're at a critical moment as our schools are back in session. The flu season's upon us, and the next variant of the disease could strike again. We're beating this now, and we're optimistic that we can get back to normal operations soon, but it's not the time to stop doing what has made us successful to this point. While this declaration has direct impacts to our community as a second-class borough, the implications affect all Alaskans. After dealing with this pandemic for nearly a year, Interior residents are tired and need stability and certainty. As a state, we value local control, but in this case, while there is a declared world pandemic, we cannot act without state authority. The legislature and or the administration must find a way to extend the public health emergency before the current declaration expires this Saturday at midnight to avoid unnecessary uncertainty and risk surrounding our community's response efforts to this pandemic. I urge your swift action in support of this legislation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ms.
Mr. Chairman, can I make just a brief comment? They received, the North Star Borough received $25 million almost today.
All right, thank you. Next we have John, I'm going to mispronounce your last name, John, but I believe it's, is it Hockendorner? Followed by a Patty Wilbanks.
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Members of the committee, my name is John Hockendorner. I am from Fairbanks and am representing myself, my wife, and my daughter, and strongly oppose SB 56. I would like to take some time to talk about what the pandemic did not do and what the Dunleavy administration and Zinc, Adam Crum, and the team have done. Pandemic did not utilize faulty and provably false computer modeling to estimate cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. The pandemic did not fracture a cohesive society into essential and non-essential cohorts. The pandemic did not isolate seniors and elders from loved ones without their consent or acknowledgement, did not silently move the goalposts without providing clear metrics nor justification, did not use selective messaging and data to coerce and subsequently further divide the community. The pandemic did not promote evidentially baseless community-wide masking whilst ignoring robust randomized control trials, meta-analyses, OSHA research, and pandemic planning documentation from every government and international and national organization on the planet that advised against the use of community masking as a mitigation tactic, all while providing zero acknowledgement of the very real negative health impacts, both physiological and psychological. The pandemic did not initiate lockdowns or stay-at-home orders, did not close schools, did not advise that children be subjected to the dehumanizing torture of masking without policy-grade research, nor did it then prostitute those same children via social media posts to promote its agenda. It did not create lucrative industries dependent on its continuation. The pandemic is not allowing a private corporation to dehumanize, harass, and corral people at the airport to get tested. The pandemic did not mention nor demonize the very real, proven, and diverse prophylactic and supplementation options available. It is not promoting a not-fit-for-purpose non-diagnostic test with a known false positive susceptibility that is used to broadcast case numbers. The pandemic is not diagnosing an individual with a disease upon the detection of a fragment of RNA without a full medical evaluation and accompanying symptoms. It is not promoting the lie that is asymptomatic transmission. The pandemic did not raise the unemployment, suicide, suicidal ideation, domestic abuse, or substance abuse rates. It did not cause you to miss a crucial appointment or time-sensitive diagnosis.
And John, if you could wrap up your comments, your time is up.
Yes, of course. Finally, the pandemic is not requesting an extension of an already fraudulent disaster declaration to facilitate the uptake of a for-profit investigational and experimental pharmaceutical product with devastating side effects an unknown efficacy that you won't be told about and won't know your risk of experiencing. I have one more sentence, please.
Yes.
I have no intent to disparage nor downplay the very real impact this disease has had on our state and the nation, but 1 year in, we have an opportunity to detach and reflect in honesty about the collateral damage, the efficacy of mitigation tactics and non-pharmaceutical interventions, and the role we want government to play going forward. On behalf of my family and myself, I encourage you to vote no on SB 56. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Patty Wilbanks, followed by Katie Capozzi. Patty, are you with us?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah. You may begin your testimony.
Can you hear me?
Yes, you may begin when you're ready.
I'm on mute. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Patty, we can hear you if you want to start
okay.
your
okay,
testimony.
Great. Thank you. Hello. Thank you for allowing me this time to testify today. My name is Patty Wilbanks, and I'm representing myself, my husband, my son, and my daughter. I have no financial gain in testifying. I'm a retired colonel from the Alaska National Guard, and I live in Anchorage, Alaska. I oppose extending emergency powers because I believe COVID-19 is no longer an emergency situation, and we shouldn't do it because it's easier for state agencies or to continue funding for medical organizations. The federal government continues to induce fear, and it's up to the states to stop the madness and protect the citizens from unconstitutional demands and government overreach. If these emergency powers are extended, you send a message to our citizens that COVID is so deadly it deserves this moniker, when in fact it does not. The cities and boroughs in Alaska, best example, Anchorage, use this emergency powers as justifications to continue their unconstitutional mandates on their citizens. Logic must prevail, and it does start with you. The Health and Social Services document states there are 48 million cases of COVID-19 confirmed worldwide, 9 million cases in the United States. I agree that these numbers seem big and they seem scary, but if you compare that to the flu, which, let's take a look at 2017, there were 45 million flu cases in the United States now compared to 48 million worldwide. There are more cases of flu in the U.S. than COVID worldwide. The death rate in the U.S. for the flu was 61,000. The COVID rate was 235,000. I agree this is higher, but you have to take into consideration that the flu has almost been non-existent this year. So I ask, exactly, where were the emergency powers for the governor during the 2017-2018 flu season? A year ago, we didn't understand COVID or how serious it really was, and I supported the emergency powers, and I believe it was a prudent decision. But now we know a lot more, and it doesn't qualify. But I will tell you what is an emergency: the suicide rates in Alaska. The suppression, the fear, the loss of income, and the isolation weigh on people, but our children are bearing the brunt of this insanity. Most of the children in Anchorage have not attended school in almost a year. This education is greatly suffering, but most importantly, their mental health. The teachers are too scared to go back because they fear the disease, and granting these emergency powers plays into those fears. But again, it's our children that are suffering. To my point, let me tell you just a very quick story.
Hey, Patty,
my daughter,
your
who
time,
is a high school
Patty?
Student, I'm almost done.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. One day, she came home crying because one of her students relayed that he was thinking about death. He's depressed. He's lonely. He can't get out. All he can do is go on Zoom. She came home scared. The reason she was scared is because he was a fifth grader. He's not enjoying life as a 10-year-old, all because of the overreaction of adults and the government. Please set the example. Stop playing into this unreasonable fear. Do not approve extending the government emergency powers. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Katie Capozzi, followed by Michael Hannafin.
Thank you, Senator Wilson and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Katie Capozzi, and I serve as the president and CEO of the Alaska Chamber. The Alaska Chamber was founded in 1953, and our mission is to advocate for a healthy business environment in Alaska. The Chamber has more than 700 members and represents businesses of all sizes and industries from across the state. The Alaska Chamber supports the passage of SB 56 and the extension of the current emergency declaration. Businesses in Alaska have suffered immensely over the course of the COVID-19 pandemic, and 11 months into this public health and economic crisis, many are struggling to keep their doors open. Despite the twists and turns the business community has endured since last March, we are beginning to see a light at the end of the tunnel and plotting our course for recovery. Economic recovery, however, hinges on our continued vigilant response to COVID-19. Healthy people are the foundation of a healthy economy. Addressing public health concerns contributes to Alaska's ability to recover. While Alaska has had lower case counts and hospitalizations, and we lead the nation in vaccinations per capita, it is more important than ever we keep the tools in place that allowed for this positive trend. Any lapse in the state's ability to accept and distribute vaccine, procure PPE, or receive other healthcare resources immediately impedes the progress we've made and adds unacceptable uncertainty to our collective recovery, both from a health and economic perspective. Without the extension, operations throughout the state and across many industries are under threat, causing an unnecessary and avoidable obstacle to getting our economy back on track. We want to be clear that, from the business community's perspective, the emergency declaration extension does not represent more restrictions and burdens than mandates. Quite the opposite. The state's health orders authorized by the disaster declaration place a priority on critical infrastructure industries, implement workplace safety protocols, and retain state primacy for promoting safe travel into and within Alaska. The state's declaration supports the business community and ensures that commerce continues. Our fragile economy depends on the certainty the emergency declaration provides. The Alaska Chamber urges swift passage of SB 56. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Michael Hennefren, followed by Mike Alexander. And just to remind folks that are online, we're going to continue to take testimony to about 2:20, at which time we're going to go into the amendment process of this bill. Mike, we may begin when you're ready.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. I'm a doctor of chiropractic, a small business owner, and a veteran of the United States Air Force. I've testified several times in our local community in Anchorage here, and I have proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that we're not in a pandemic. I testified recently that the COVID PCR test is invalid, and the virologist from California that I cited said that the cycling of this test is way too high, and it's set at 40. The industry standard is 17. Still does not prove that you're sick or ill or contagious. We are basing our numbers and the actions of our state and our local government on false data. This is a problem. This is a dereliction of duty of Dr. Zink and everybody in the government in this state for not looking at it. If, for instance, the cycling for the test was reduced to 35 cycles, that would mean that 43% of our positive tests would be negative. If it was cycled down to 30, which is still double the industry standard, that would indicate that 63% would no longer be judged a positive. We have seen an increase in suicide. We've lost 277 souls, one of which was my patient. And as tragic as that is, we have lost over 665 souls to the suicide and drug overdose from January 1st, 2020 through November 30th, 2020, according to the State of Alaska epidemiologist. The suicide care line saw an increase of 90% on their calls just in the third quarter, comparing 2019 to 2020, with 51% increase in the number of new callers. We are not in a state of emergency. We are not in a pandemic. The numbers do not indicate that we are even in an epidemic at this stage in the game. It is an abuse of power to continue to extend these orders and do any restrictions. I understand the state is the state and the local government is that, and each one of them has their own powers associated with that. But to continue on, Governor Dunleavy needs to set the example for the entire state, recognize that we are no longer in a state of emergency. We have healthcare procedures that can save patients through hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, zinc, vitamin C. If these
Dr. Hennefren, if you could wrap up your comments, your 2 minutes is over.
We have available treatments for our patients with very, very high success rates. The survival rate is upwards of 98% for those 75 and younger. That is not a pandemic. That is not an epidemic. I vehemently oppose SB 56. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Mike Alexander, followed by Diana Greaser. Mr. Alexander, if you can state your name for the record and plan 2 minutes for your testimony.
Mike Alexander, Big Lake. I'm a retired nurse. I have no financial interest in this thing. I'm representing myself and basically all the non-essential workers of Big Lake because they have been thrown under the bus by these emergency orders. As everyone has previously stated much better than I can, we have treatments. The vaccine is questionable on the effects and also on its actually effectiveness. So what I would like to see you do is follow South Dakota's example. Do not vote for this. I'm vehemently opposed to this SB 56. Put this thing away. We haven't got an epidemic. I've done this for years. I was doing this 50 years ago in the Navy on epidemics. This isn't an epidemic. There is nothing here except the only ones I've heard in favor of this are people who don't make a buck off of it. Other than that, I hope you will not let this pass and get it out of its existence right now. I strongly urge all of you to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Diane Gresser, followed by followed by Tiffany Borge.
Hello, this is Diana. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. Thank you, committee members, for hearing me. I haven't actually prepared anything to read, but for the sake of brevity, I will let you know that my husband and I, we've been in Alaska he was here before statehood, and I came in shortly after, so we're a bit older. I'm a retired nurse as well, and I strongly urge you not to vote in favor of Senate Bill 56. I do not support it. I oppose it for all of the various reasons you've already heard people testify for. So with that, I'll let you go, and I thank you again for hearing me.
Thank you. Next, we have Tiffany Borges, followed by Dr. Elizabeth Ruff. Are you in line with us, Tiffany? Tiffany, are we on mute? Well, we'll come back to you after Dr. Elizabeth Ruff's testimony. We'll go move on.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Dr. Elizabeth Ruff. I'm a site administrator with Lower Kuskokwim School District, and I reside in the village of Lukhtvik, which is the Yupik community. It's the relocation community for the village of Nutok. So I believe that this emergency relief should be extended with consideration to rural school districts. LKSD has gone to great lengths to bring connectedness to the rural village and the villages within our school district. Additional funds need to be focused on continuing to build the infrastructure to support this system long after this pandemic is in ancient memory. Schools would also benefit from additional dollars towards supplies so that we can support our students who are attempting to learn and to be engaged with their teachers through Zoom and Moodle classes. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go back to Tiffany Borges. Are you with us, Ms. Borges? All right. For some reason, we have technical difficulties here in your testimony. If you want to, and for everyone online, maybe following along, it's still not too late to send in your written testimony to the HESS committee at shss@akleg.gov. We're now going to move on to Teresa Emlak, followed by Bert Hootland.
Hi. My name is Teresa Emlak. I'm representing myself, my husband, my kids. I'm a small business owner. I gain no financial benefit from any of this. I just strongly ask everyone to vote no on SB 56. I think in the beginning, the emergency declaration has been a tremendous blessing, but now I don't think there's a need for it. We have tremendous therapeutics that work, and I think it really hurts us as a community by being continuing to be dishonest with each other about therapeutics. And it kind of feels like the government's protocol has been locked up, shut down, stay in your home, which is, in one sense, for us as a citizen, at least for me as a citizen, it feels like the government is saying, trust us because we don't trust you. So what I see right now is, like, stuff, small businesses are suffering, our children are suffering, and America's built on the back of small businesses. And so my kind of like my reflection question is, are you trying to destroy small business? I have friends in the restaurant industry, I'm trying not to get emotional, that have lost their livelihood. And I just want to know, I understand that you're trying to help Alaskans, but in this emergency, you're really hurting Alaskans. So I'm just asking, please vote no on SB 56. Let us know about therapeutics. And also look at Merck, what Merck has done. It has stopped developing the COVID-19 vaccine because why? Treatment works, and it really does. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, next we have Bert Hoetteling, followed by Vicki Kennedy.
Hi, my name is Bert Hoetteling, and as a majority of us are saying, I am not profiting off of this in any way, nor have I even received one penny of funding from anything that has been distributed since day one. I am not considered an essential service, but I do provide an essential service that has kept me in business since the beginning of all of this. Unfortunately, I cannot say the same for the rest of the people that my company and I service out there in the industry that I am in. Emergency was supposed to be declared so that we could be able to build up our medical facilities to be able to take care of the massive flood of patients that we're going to be seeing inside of the hospitals and whatnot. Yet the numbers, if you look at what has been going into the hospitals themselves, have statistically been basically have been matching what we have seen in prior years during when it's just a regular flu season going into the hospitals, how many ICU beds are in use. The emergency that was declared in the very beginning that caused us all to be locked down has long gone and passed. As someone had stated earlier today, that the tests that are being used are at 40 times, yet the normal standard rate is only 17. I'm not surprised to have heard that just after President Joe Biden had taken office that they came back out and says that they're revising that and lowering the PCR values so that the tests would actually prevent them from having more false positives and maybe get a little bit more accurate track record of what is going on out there. I don't know if this has been implemented and actually put into place, but this came out from the WHO, from the CDC, that this was what the case of what they were going to do with the testing. There is no difference than what we have seen with other past flus. I'm sure that if we go and take the statistics and look at how many people died in the past prior to this pandemic that had died while they had the flu, why wasn't the flu listed as their main cause for death? Was it their cancer? Wasn't their heart attack? This should have been the flu if we were to use the same standards. Why are we also looking at it as you can die with COVID, but you can't die with the vaccine shot?
Okay, Bert, if you could wrap up your comments.
Every patient that has ever died, whether they were climbing up a ladder and fell off and broke their neck.
Bert, your time is up. If you could wrap up your comments.
I thank you all for your time here. I'm a resounding no on extending this emergency order. Let's please end this as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next person is, and probably are going to be our last person, is going to be Vicki Kennedy. Vicki, if you can start your name.
Yeah. Hello there, Senator Wilson. How are you? Vicki Joe Kennedy here. And I'd like to send congratulations to Senator Biggs, Castillo, Hughes, and especially my favorite. She knows who she is. Anyway, I tried to call you last week from the hospital, And yes, Senator Wilson, we were on the same plane that Sunday on the 24th, and I became quite sick. So a pharmacist actually convinced me to go to the hospital, and I indeed had a severe case of pneumonia. I was tested 3 times for COVID. I was negative, so I wouldn't be too sure that I didn't have it. But I am totally opposed to this bill because I've seen more damage done by this bill than I have anything COVID could have given me. When I showed up at the hospital, I answered 8 out of the 10 questions honestly, and I felt like Elliot and E.T. I mean, they did the proper thing. They did all this. But one thing we all have to remember is there is no money made in the cure. There's money made in the prevention and the treatment. And I just don't trust any of it anymore. I totally don't trust it. When we could go to every box store in Juneau, and yes, I'm still here, every box store was open, but yet we couldn't go to church. My fellow church people, they were very upset over that. And they were having to meet in secret. And I found that just communistic. And if I ever find out who started that run on toilet paper, that seems to be the only people who have profited, besides the medical community, from this. Oh, well, toilet paper shortage. Everybody run out and bought every piece of paper that was could be bought, including notebooks.
Yes, Ms.
It was an embarrassment to this nation.
Yes, Ms. Vicki Kennedy, if you could wrap up your comment, your time is up.
Yes, I'm just glad you're back, and I'm sorry I'm not in that house because that house is not in order, but I would be shaking my finger, but I'm glad the Senate's in, and thank you, Chairman Wilson.
All right, thank you. At this point in time, we are going to close public testimony on Senate Bill 56.
Object.
And that's not a we're going to go ahead and close public testimony. There is going to be ample time for members of the public to continue testifying, as this bill has other items of referral. And we need to get on to the amendment process, and we are now going to take amendments.
Mr. Chairman, can I
take an ID?
So are you closing?
Record. At this time, we are going to begin the amendment process on Senate Bill 56. Just want to again thank everyone for that did come in and were able to testify. And this bill does have another committee of referral that public testimony. We'll have that availability as well. Also want to recognize Senator Michicki, Senate President has also joined us a while back. Also for members of the committee, if there are questions, we do have the drafter of Ledge Legal on the line, as well as the commissioner is in the room with us, as well as Colleen Glover from Department of Revenue, Brian Fisher from Department of Military and Veteran Affairs, Hedy Heiberg from Director of Public Health, Director Sarah Chambers from Commerce, and Susan Powler from Department of Law are also online to answer any of committee members' questions. We're going to go ahead and continue amendment process to about 2:55, and we'll take an at ease there to take the will of the committee. At that time, we'll now have amendment number one. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number one.
Yeah.
There's an objection. Senator Begich, you want to speak to your amendment?
Yes. Amendment number one would insert a new section on page 10 at line 4. This section came out of this amendment comes out of a conversation we had when we were first presented the bill, when we identified that retroactively we would be enacting this bill if it were passed. There was a retroactive clause that would kick in on all the way back to February 14th. It was noted from the commissioner that mandates would expire and become recommendations after the order expired on February 13th. So it would mean that individuals coming into the state of Alaska would be under the impression that they were under a recommendation, and then when the retroactivity clause kicked in, should this bill be passed, they would then be suddenly under a mandate that would be retroactive to that date. So thus creating a potential liability that they would be uninformed about. And this bill simply protects those individuals who might be coming into state from that liability that might otherwise accrue. I've spoken to the representative of the Department of Health and Social Services and the commissioner. They've concurred that this language would, in their minds, correct that issue should this bill eventually pass.
Thank you. Any other further discussion? Seeing none, is the objection still maintained?
Yes.
All right, we'll do a roll call vote.
Senator Bacon?
Yes.
Senator Hughes?
Yes.
Senator Costello?
No.
Senator Reinbold?
No.
Senator Wilson?
Yes.
Three yeas, two nays.
All right, with three yeas and two nays, amendment number one passes. Now I move on to amendment number two, Senator Hughes.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number two.
Check.
All right. Senator Hughes, would you like to speak to your amendment?
Yes, I indeed would. And I'm going to preface it by saying I actually was working on another amendment. And what this amendment does, I'll tell you first what it does. It changes the extension from September 30th, 2021 to March 15th, 2021. But, Mr. Chair, my original intention and working with the administration and alleged legal was actually to actually get rid of the emergency declaration overall. The problem we faced was it was pretty complicated. We were trying to give the administration specific tools they need in order to expedite procurement of PPE supplies, therapeutics, vaccines, to be able to have adequate testing sites, and to provide everything that they might need to finish this off, because I, like many testified today, do not agree that we are still in a state of emergency. In fact, when I look on page three, the department itself refers to monitoring and actively managing the situation, and that doesn't signal emergency to me. So I just want all the individuals who testify online, excellent testimony. Each one of you, I listened in detail and took notes. I appreciate the statistics Dr. Hannafin offered, and I do agree with you. However, we need to make sure the administration has the tools to monitor and manage at this point. And if I would have rushed forward an amendment to stop the declaration and not have provided an amendment with all the necessary tools, we would have had a problem. So at this point, what I am suggesting and what this amendment does is allows 30 days so that we can get our ducks in a row, that we can make sure the administration has all the tools it needs. This bill moves next to the Labor and Commerce Committee, and I've had conversations with the chair of that committee, Senator Costello, who is diligently working on looking to make sure the administration would have the tools. So at this time, and members of the public, as much as I'd like the emergency to go away, because I feel we are in now moving into a period of recovery, and with that recovery moving towards a state of normalcy, I believe it is necessary so that we get this right and that it can ensure the health and well-being of Alaskans would be to simply extend the declaration and for 30 days so that we can figure that out. I also want folks to know, because I've gotten a lot of information, Mr. Chair, from people supporting the continuation till September. There's a lot of incorrect information out there that federal dollars can't be received unless we have this declaration continuing. That's not true. So I think these 30 days will allow us to tease all that out so we have good information and could make a better decision at that point in 30 days. So with that, Mr. Wilson, I'm happy, Chair Wilson, happy to answer any questions of members.
Thank you. Senator Reinbold.
So So first of all, I want to apologize to everybody who's waited online three different afternoons to testify. Now that the testimony sadly is permanently closed, we're going to make that right at some point. But I did want to speak to this amendment. I passionately disagree with this amendment. The administration has had a year. They told me that they had been working since January of 2020 to get PPE and all that, and to extend this disaster when Alaskans are suffering at this unprecedented, I've never seen anything like in the history of Alaska. I think, you know, extending it another 30 days based on getting PPE, that's ridiculous. So I'm a passionate no on this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Seeing none, is the objection maintained?
Absolutely.
Right, we'll go ahead and do a roll call vote.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Reinbold.
No.
Senator Bagan.
Yes.
Senator Wilson.
Yes.
Four yeas, one nay.
Right. With four yeas and one nay, Amendment 2 passes. Amendment number 3, Senator Reinbold.
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment number 3.
Object.
Okay, so with that.
Yes.
With that, so basically what this does, this amendment, if you look in the bill itself on page 5, line 24, this basically talks about reporting of this bill to back to the legislature. And basically what this section 4 does is it just requires total expenditures incurred by the state in response to the public health disaster. And when you guys passed 241, of course, I'm a no on that, but when it was passed, there was a much better section on the reporting in 241. And so basically what this does is this requires a much better reporting mechanisms. So it lists the expenditures to cope with the disaster and provides really important information. And as she just passed out, thank you, Jody, for passing it out. For example, when 241 was passed, one thing was quarantine and isolation orders, especially involuntary quarantine and isolation orders, and I pass out an example. That was one of the requirements for 241, but there's a lot of more detailed information provided to the legislature, which I think is much better in 241 that is presented, just the high-level stuff in this bill. So with that, just for transparency and important information that's listed, not just a total expenditure, but more in more details. This is a report to the legislature.
All right. Is there any other further conversation? Senator Hughes.
Yes, Senator Reinbold, the way it is written right now, it looks like any activity related to isolation or quarantine would be reported. So to me, that says if the person in quarantine is playing Scrabble, if the person is calling their mother, it's not clear. It's just saying any activity. So I think there's a problem with the amendment.
Okay. Senator Reinbold?
This basically is very important. I think that when people are being told that they have to isolate or quarantine, that is a very important information. And I actually think Senate Bill 241 and the mandates have...
Hey, guys, if you...
Basically, a lot of people have lost their freedom. I can give you an example of somebody who was locked in a Captain Cook hotel when they were going up to the slope, and they couldn't get out. They weren't given a key to get out of their hotel room. So I think this is super important for us to have information. We are a free society, and this COVID disaster has stripped freedom. So I think this is of critical importance to get information out to the legislature and to the people of what is exactly going on.
Further debate? Seeing none. Senator Hughes?
I just want to say I'm going to be a no on this because I don't think it's clearly written. I don't think that it's a bad idea for the Department of Health and Social Services to have some of this, but I think rushing this with this amendment, I can't support it as written. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hughes. I'm sorry, Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. This is also, I just want to point out that this report includes an exclamation without disclosing any personal information. of activities regarding isolation and quarantine. It also talks about adverse reactions, injuries, side effects, and death related to the COVID-19 vaccine. And I think this is very, very important information that Alaskans deserve, especially because of this rush to get this mRNA vaccine out. And I think this is extremely important. And I'm sorry you're having a problem with the grammar, but I think this is very, very important information for Alaskans. We deserve to know the adverse reactions, the injuries, side effects, and deaths related to this vaccine.
All right. Any further debate? Seeing none, I'll maintain my objection. Do a roll call vote.
No.
Senator Rangel.
Yes.
Senator Bagan.
No.
Senator Hughes.
No.
Senator Wilson.
No.
One yea, four nays.
With one yea and four nays, amendment number three fails. Amendment number four, Senator Rangel.
Mr. Chair, I move amendment four.
Object for purpose of discussion.
Okay. What amendment number four does, it takes the power from the executive branch for creating a financial plan to allowing the legislature to create the finance plan.
Is there any
comment?
Yes, Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I normally agree with Senator Rainbow on many things, and this may actually be a good idea, but I think this is something that should be considered by the Finance Committee. And as a member of the HES Committee, I don't feel comfortable making the call on this, so I'm going to be a no. If you're not sure about something, it's better to be a no. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Rainbow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Constitution does have the legislature has the appropriation power, so it is an oath that you take to the Constitution that says that we do the financing. So, I mean, it's as clear as day, and this just allows the legislature to have its due constitutional authority to create a finance plan.
Thank you, Senator.
And just allow me to respond to that. What is in the bill right now is a financing plan, and we are the legislature, so we are having a part in that, Mr. Chair.
Closing comments?
Yes, Senator Rainbolt.
Closing comments. This allows the executive branch to put together the financing plan, and my amendment allows the legislature to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll maintain my objection. We'll do a roll call vote.
Senator Hughes.
No.
Senator Costello.
No.
Senator Rainbolt.
Yes.
Senator Bacon.
No.
Senator Wilson.
No. With one yea and four nays, amendment number four fails. Amendment number five, Senator Rainbolt.
I move amendment number five.
Object for purposes of discussion.
So basically what amendment number five does is it to, instead of the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, this allows the legislature, based on credible scientific, epidemiological, and virological nationally respected peer review research in regards to a disaster. I'm going to withdraw this amendment at this time, because basically what I really wanted for this one was in order to declare a disaster. This is actually in regards to ending the disaster, and so the intent is not clear in this one.
Thank you. Amendment number five is withdrawn. We'll now move on to amendment number six. Senator Rainbolt.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number six.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
So, Mr. Chairman, what amendment number six does is it said that the state shall supply sufficient food, water, and other supplies for a 60-day emergency use for the community. Because of issues, if we really are talking about rewriting, which basically Senate Bill 56 does, is it rewrites disaster declaration statutes. And so this, I think that this is really important that each district, that the state looks and helps to plan for sufficient food, water, and other supplies for emergency use in each and every district in the state.
All right. Any senators' comments? Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do believe, and I do think that we do need to look at the disaster statues as an overall whole, and I think there may be an opportunity to do that perhaps in the Judiciary Committee. This particular amendment, although having a plan in place is a good idea, would add a huge fiscal note. I also think it's actually the role of individuals and communities rather than the state to be putting away a 60-day supply. I do think it is important. You know, we are in a location on the globe where we have earthquakes and other disasters. So while I appreciate the intent and I fully support communities having a stockpile, having the state do it for the communities and creating a huge fiscal note, I think is an impediment to what we're presently dealing with. So I hope that we can have a discussion about these kind of things. Food security is incredibly important. At this time, rushing this policy through, I don't agree with it at this time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other comments?
Yes.
Senator Reinbold.
And closing comments would be, I think this is, Senate Bill 56 is a rewrite of the disaster. It's adding in a whole bunch of stuff, and therefore this is, to me, the appropriate place because of fires, because of earthquakes, because of potential military threats, et cetera. I think a disaster plan, one of the most important things you can do is help provide for food, water, heat, and medical supplies. So I think if you don't include this in a disaster plan, I think it's just unbelievable. And so with that, I urge a yes vote. This is just common sense.
I will maintain my objection. We'll do a roll call vote.
Senator Costello.
No.
Senator Reinbold.
Yes.
Senator Bacon.
No.
No.
Senator Wilson.
No.
One yay, four nays.
With one yay and four nays, amendment number six fails. We're now moving on to amendment number seven. Senator Reinbold.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number seven.
Object for purposes of discussion.
So basically what this does is it removes Section 2 from the bill, and I know this is a big amendment. However, first of all, the disaster was unsubstantiated. It was called when there were zero cases. Then it was based on a UAA model that was done, and that model ended up being rife with flaws and errors. This section is unnecessary. The disaster has been unaudited. There's been no checks and balances in regards to this. Then the disaster was extended back in November to December. I believe it was illegal because the statutes clearly say that a disaster can only be 30 days. Senate Bill 241 extended it, and a lot of people were under duress during 241 when 241 was done, and I only remember one hearing. But the bottom line is it was extended again December 15th to January 15th. Now he's asking for grace for all of it that he did without letting us as a legislature weigh in on a single mandate. We weren't able to weigh in on a single health order. The financial plan was not done by the legislature. It was the football was stripped and it was given to the executive branch. And now he wants us to extend it through September 2021, which I just find completely outrageous. The number of Alaskans that are suffering is unprecedented. The issues of our children, you know, with the mental health issues that they're having, with the businesses going under. I mean, just the thought of extending this this declaration or even making it retroactive to me is completely unacceptable and provides no checks and balances. We are a separate branch of government, and I do not believe we should just be allowing these guys to go do whatever they want and then making it retroactive. And with that, I strongly support amendment number two, or excuse me, this amendment.
All right. We'll take a brief ideas here. Senator Begich, then we'll go to Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just very briefly, I agree with some of the comments of my colleague from Eagle River. And when it comes to the November and December in January orders. I can't support this amendment because it goes beyond that, but I do want to be on record as agreeing with her on the question of the legality of those other orders. Right now, we're focused on our constitutional responsibility to the life, health, and safety of Alaskans, and so regretfully, I will be opposing this amendment.
Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we passed Amendment 2, changing the date to March 15th, there's actually a problem with this being applicable. It would actually remove the possibility of ending the declaration earlier. So I think it's a bit confused because we passed Amendment Number 2, so I won't be supporting it.
All right, Senator Reinbold.
Yeah, these amendments were written to the bill before us, and it's still, with that amendment that got offered and got passed, it still makes all this retroactive, basically, in regards to the disaster declarations that were done in the past. So I think this is 100% still of important, because basically what you guys are saying is you agreed with everything the governor did. Even if the March 15th date is, you're saying you agreed with the illegal disaster declarations that were unjustified, unaudited, and no checks and balances with the legislature. So it's a very serious separation of powers issues.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Costello.
Thank you. So assigning a motive to another legislator is not allowed. I'm going to be a no on this. It does not mean that I agree with everything that the governor does. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I'll maintain my – yes, Senator Rumble.
There was no motive. I was just saying what the amendment did. It was just a statement of fact.
Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll take – I'll maintain my objection. We'll take a roll call vote.
Yes.
No.
Senator Hughes.
No.
Senator Costello.
No.
Senator Wilson.
No.
One yay, four nays.
With one yay and four nays, Amendment Number 7 fails. We're now Amendment Number 8.
Mr. Speaker, at ease, or Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment Number 8.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
So what Amendment Number 8 it does is it eliminates Section 13 in the bill, which is on page 10. Section 13 says the uncodified law of the state of Alaska is amended by adding a new section. This is an extremely dangerous precedent, by the way. It says retroactivity. If this takes effect after February 14th, 2021, this act is retroactive to February 14th, 2021. Again, this sets a bad precedent. So if we don't pass this law by the 14th, then the governor is basically telling us, no, we're going to go back and make it retroactive anyway. I think this is one of the worst precedents I've ever seen. Again, the disaster is unsubstantiated. This is a serious separation of powers issue. Senate Bill 241, there's already 18 mandates that were passed without input from the legislative branch. The disaster was extended three times without the legislative branch, which I believe was breaking the law. This could have ex po facto laws. I would need to check with Ledge Legal in regards to that. But the bottom line is making something retroactive. It just doesn't settle right. And I need to vet that with Ledge Legal, but that concerns me. So it basically gives immunity to the governor for what he's been doing, and I just think we've set a bad precedent in so many ways that this section is a serious concern to me. So with that, I would urge a yes vote.
So I'll speak to my objection here. In Senate Bill 241, we had it's basically just an effective date, and the effective dates were retroactive in 241 by the time the governor signed that bill to make sure that we had coverage for those businesses and items that needed that retroactivity just for better protection after the bill passed and it was signed into law. And I think the intent, and I'm not going to speak on behalf of the administration at all, but I believe it's the retroactivity here is because of where we are at currently within our status of the other body. And with that, I'll maintain my Senator Hughes.
Yeah, first of all, when we have legislation before us and the committee makes decisions on it and we're passing it through the body, the governor's not telling us what to do. We are deciding what to do. We are the policymakers here. My concern, now that we have shortened the declaration so that we can tease out what is actually needed, what tools are actually needed so we can end the emergency declaration, if we take this out, then we're going to have a problem actually figuring out what we need to in the next 30 days. I'm also concerned not really fully understanding the impact of this. Again, this is some big and fast policy decisions that we're making here without all the information necessary. So for that reason, I'm not saying it might work, but I don't know if it would. And I'm concerned that we need the 30 days in order to provide the tools that are necessary. So I'm going to be a no.
Senator Reinbold.
Okay, and just final comments in regards to this. This is very simple. This is not heavy-duty legislative work. This is simply saying if this passes later, we're not going to go and make it retroactive, which is unbelievable, terrible precedence, in my opinion. And I absolutely think that this amendment at minimal should pass.
I'll maintain my objection. We'll do a roll call vote.
No.
No.
Senator Costello.
No.
Senator Reinbold.
Yes.
Senator Wilson.
No.
One yay, four nays.
With one yay and four nays, amendment number 8 fails. We'll take a brief at ease here. Back on the record, we're going to go to amendment number 13. Senator Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So amendment number 13, we jumped ahead. This basically says relating to personal objections to the administration of the COVID-19 vaccines. It basically just allows for religious, medical, or other grounds to object.
There was not an objection to amendment number 13, so without an objection, it passes.
Mr. Chairman?
Amendment number 14, Senator Reinbold.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number 14.
Any objection? With no objection, amendment number 14 passes. Back to amendment number 9, Senator Reinbold.
Amendment number 9. And just so the people online know, that was in regards to informed consent. Thank you, committee members, by the way. Being able to object out is very important, and also having informed consent is incredibly valuable. So thank you. In regards to Amendment 9, Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment number 9.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Senator Reinbold, sorry.
Thank you. We had a really good discussion in regards to telehealth last week. And so I think that basically this just eliminates the telehealth information out, and it puts it back into a separate bill, hopefully. We worked on this issue a lot, and what concerns me a lot with what's in this bill is it does not allow or require any longer Alaska physician preference, basically. Before, people were able to see a physician firsthand, so that they were able to examine, get to know them, figure out the social dynamics of the family and things like that. And I think that first initial exam is really, really important. In this bill, it does not require an Alaskan physician to have an exam first. And that was so important. I work with Representative Vasquez on this, and that was something that was so important for Alaska physicians. And that's why I object to what's in Senate Bill 56, and I'm eliminating that so that it does require Alaska preference and having a Alaska physician be seen by by the patients be seen. So anyway, I think this is a really important thing for the doctors in Alaska. So with that, I urge a yes vote on Amendment Number 9.
Senator Hughes.
Yes, although I totally agree with Senator Reinbold that an in-person physical exam is very important with Alaska preference. However, when a person tests positive for COVID, it's important for them not to have an in-person appointment for that first time. So until we get a handle on this, I think that this is leaving the telehealth regs and statutes the way they are to allow greater flexibility is important. If we have a shortage of providers in this state that we can draw on others that are capable that can help Alaskans maintain good health, I think it's important. So in summary, telehealth at this time is particularly important, so I think we need to leave it as is, but I do agree in the future with Senator Reinbold returning to the Alaska physician preference. Thank you.
Senator Begich.
Very briefly, given the restriction till March 15th that we adopted earlier, I am only going to be opposing this amendment because of that restriction. It needs to be, this section of the bill needs to be rewritten, and I will hope to see those changes made. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Reinbold.
Yeah, with that, I think we worked really hard on this, and in the past, and I think even with COVID, there's excellent treatments for COVID. If you go to Americans Doctors on the front line, they have treated so many patients, and they treat them a lot of times one-on-one. And with ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and because we know this disease now, I still think it is priceless. I worked in the medical industry for a long time, and that first initial visit is so powerful and so important. And even with COVID, I still think it's very, very important for people to meet their patients. And so I'm gonna continue to ask for Amendment Number 9.
With that, I'll maintain my objection. Last roll call vote for this amendment.
No.
Senator Costello.
No.
Senator Reinbold.
Yes.
Senator Begich.
No.
Senator Wilson.
No.
One yay, four nays.
And with one yay and four nays, Amendment Number 10 fails. This time, coming to the end of our committee, I would just going to let members know that this is going to end our amendment process for today. We will allow, members will always have the chance on the floor to offer amendments, and for the next committee referral, they could talk to the committee chairperson or members of that committee to continue their amendment processes going forth.
Can we take an at ease just for a moment?
Yeah, take a brief at ease. Being an occupational professional licensing thing, I believe this amendment will be considered in the next committee referral by the committee chair. With that, Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And before I speak to move the Senate Bill 56, I am thankful I was able to make a little speech earlier about the work that's ahead so that we can actually move into a full period of recovery and into a state of normalcy, which I think is very important. And I also want the public, before I make this move, to understand that what is happening in various municipalities is not connected to this declaration being extended for 30 days. Those are decisions made at the local level. So if you have concerns about schools being closed, about any type of mandates, you need to be talking to your city councils or assembly members. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I move SB 56, version 32-GS1011/A from committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Object.
As amended.
All right. We have an objection. We'll go and do a verbal roll call.
Senator Costello.
Yes.
Senator Reinbold.
No.
Senator Begich.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Wilson.
Yes.
Four yeas, one nay.
Right. With four yeas, one nay, Senate Bill 56, version GS of 1011, /A as amended from committee passes. With that, that concludes our business for today. With no other business this week, the Thursday meeting is canceled. Are there any members closing comments? Senator Begich?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two quick things. Number one, earlier today there was a comment made about 45 million flu cases last year. Last year we had, in 2019 there were 65,000 flu cases. I wanted to correct that for the record, not 45 million. And also last week I called Mr. Kuntz's comments derogatory toward the senator from Eagle River. While I didn't agree with those comments, I apologize unreservedly to Mr. Kuntz for saying they were derogatory, because I don't believe they were derogatory on hearing the comments a second time. However, I do take exception to comments that are made about a senator's ability to review documents or not review documents. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other members' comments? Senator Reinbold.
Mr. Chairman, I just want Alaskans to know that I passionately disagree with Senate Bill 56, and I absolutely plan on voting no to this. We have an unprecedented situation going on in Alaska right now with many, many of our students out of school. We've got a mental health crisis going on. We have economic crises going on. Small businesses are suffering, and people tend to be just want to bow down to the almighty dollar, the federal dollar, right now. And I think at the cost of our freedom, at the cost of our small business, at the cost of mental health, we're pushing, Hess is pushing a very controversial new mRNA vaccination. And when we heard from them in regards to this bill, basically that was the whole push to get this bill through. So procurement, money, vaccination clinics, et cetera, based on an experimental vaccine that's basically only under emergency youth authorization right now. So I think out of the protection of health of our Alaskans, you know, we need to be precaution, you know, go very, very slowly. I'm not an anti-vaxxer, but I'm very concerned about the mRNA vaccinations and the purpose, the whole purpose that they stated that their primary purpose for this bill, and it's of a very deep concern to me. So I would like to identify my closing comments with John Hackadorn. I think he gave an exceptional testimony today, and it pretty much summarized what I believed in regards to what this bill is. And with that, on behalf of all Alaskans that are suffering, I apologize. I was not able to stop this bill.
All right, Senator Casella.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for holding this hearing today. A vote yes today was a vote to move this bill to the next committee, which happens to be a committee I chair, the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Tomorrow at 1:30, we will be having a hearing on Senate Bill 56. I invite those who were not able to testify on it today to testify in the committee tomorrow. I also welcome any comments submitted to the committee in written form. Tomorrow on the floor, this bill will be read across and assigned to my committee, and I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, again for that and for getting it to my committee. Thank you.
And for members, after we adjourn, please stay around to sign the paperwork, and we are adjourned at 3:07 p.m.